With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to Reality Rehap Ups for episode 8 of The Amazing Race Canada. It's been an eventful week. We went to Panama, and here to break it all down with me is the person who'd always choose the beer over the boxing, Mr. Dan Heaton.
Hi, Jess. Yes, I would probably fail because I don't think I have more beer drinking experience than everyone else. So if I've passed, that might indicate a problem.
We've got so much to talk about this leg. I guess I'll leave it at that. I was saying before we started recording that I could basically spend the entire hour complaining. I'm going to try not to do that. We're going to try to touch on the good things as well as the bad, because like the beers, it was a cornucopia of flavors this week. Some good, some bad, some inexplicable. But I think we got to start with the question it's a really good entry point. Did this entire leg feel pointless and telegraphed?
Yes, the answer is yes. And here's the thing. There were, for so many different reasons, it seemed that way, too. It's like, first of all, they telegraph who gets eliminated right up front, like we talked about like 4 weeks ago. I mean, not who gets eliminated, who gets non-eliminated, Jess, right up front. And then I don't know. It was really hard. And there was lots of people were in the lead and they weren't or whatever. But you always got the sense sometimes when they really put him through the ringer, I also get a feeling it's not elimination. And it also is following a pattern of every other week. So, Jess, were you, I get the impression you were, totally expecting what was going to happen pretty early on?
Yeah, I think not only was it very clear from the get-go that this was going to be a non-elimination leg, it was abundantly clear that it was going to be Karen and Bert that ended up in the unlucky non-elimination spot. It just seemed like we were all of a sudden, this team that we keep forgetting is there, more or less, this team that kind of lags at the back of the pack most of the time. And then all of a sudden, we're getting a lot of character moments about them. And we're talking up the fact that it's Mother's Day. This is all leading to a very specific thing. And granted, they really made a good effort to come back from a couple of initial really bad mistakes, but I don't know that it was ever all that close.
Yeah, there was a sense of inevitability. Even when they got out of the drum major task in front of Adam and Andrea, though I don't know by very much, I still felt like they were going to lose. And it's so weird because I feel like this show, we've raved about the editing and about how it's unpredictable and all those things are true. But this one episode, for some reason, I mean, it's weird because it's Mother's Day. It's great. Let's show something about Mother's Day. But the way the show presented it, it was like we've talked about in the past. They're either going to win the leg and win the race, which we don't expect, or they're going to get last. But still, I didn't really get the feeling this was going to be their final leg. It almost felt too cruel for it to actually, the way it was put together and what happened, for it to actually be their last leg.
Yeah, I think you raise a very, very good point here. It really seemed like this should have been a nail biter of a leg, but even when we saw Karen and Bert look like they were leaving the task, not in last place, they still felt like they were in last place for some reason. And I don't know, maybe that might even be better editing skills than the editing skills that typically put the show together, because you got to work really hard to take something that should be suspenseful and make it not suspenseful. Like, that takes extra effort. So props to the editors yet again.
They made us not. We weren't on the edge of our seat. You know, here's also the thing that is, I haven't tracked it back, but it seems like every time because when they went to Cuba, they did eliminate a team in the first leg last. I think Rita DeVette was last season. But it does seem like very often the first leg they go international, this is the second time, but they don't eliminate anybody. They always I hate to use the word always because it's not true. I already told myself it wasn't, but it does seem like they often will put the non-elimination legs when they go overseas because, one, why not eliminate somebody closer to home? But two, you also give all the teams a chance to experience the entire thing in an international destination. So that was another thing where I kind of felt like that we were going to get a non-elimination. I wouldn't have been shocked before the leg started if you told me it'd be elimination. But there is a positive to this, Jess. The positive is that barring something weird, we don't have any more non-eliminations. So that I will applaud after this leg.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. John could certainly pull something out at the Final Four the way that has been done with Amazing Race US in the last couple of seasons. But I think you're right. I'm not counting on that being the case. So hopefully we are done with non-eliminations and we'll move forward. We'll go back to Canada and things will resume and we'll get back the old race that we know and love. Especially like this leg felt really out of place to me. It felt like the Canada connection was kind of a big stretch. And also on the heels of having just been to Panama and Amazing Race US, I was like, really, Panama? Why?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I say that it was international and it obviously is, but it didn't have that same charge that they've had, you know, other seasons where they went to India late in the season or Cuba late in the season. You go to Panama, it's like, okay, that's all right. But it wasn't that exciting. And there were exciting moments. That's the thing. I know we're being pretty tough. There were exciting moments this leg. It's just that overall, I feel like, and you mentioned the Canada connection where they go to the Bio Museo, Frank Gehry's place, which is gorgeous. And they do the U.S. thing where you just go somewhere cool, you get a clue and you go somewhere else. And not that they needed to do a task inside there, but it did kind of feel like, well, we're going to shoehorn this thing in. Now let's go do what we're really going to do. I mean, that was a weird way to introduce the episode where I felt like, okay, what are we really doing right now?
Yeah, and not only that, but I didn't feel like any of these tasks felt super connected to Panama. Like maybe the task where you're identifying the pattern on the mola, maybe that one, but that's exactly like look at this thing and match it to another thing. They've done that 100 times in 100 different places already. Everything else in this leg could have been done pretty much any city in Canada.
Well, I mean, heck, there's not that many things, but I could go about 6 minutes from my house and find a brewery that has all those kinds of beers, except for the one that the name that wasn't recognized. But in general, they have most of those. So while I was excited to have a beer task, and I think that task was kind of cool, and we'll get to that in a bit. But you're right, they could do that in pretty much any city anywhere. Which is okay to a point, but you do that, you have the boxing, they're, you know, the drum major. I mean, yes, they did point out that Panama City has a very good, you know, marching band, but again, not everything fell a little bit off. And I feel like they've really been on a good roll. I think we spent a few episodes and then Mike and I were really positive last week about the episode. So it's not that I feel like the season is dead. This is just one of those hiccups. And I think we have one or two of these every season.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they can't all be total winners. You know, if they were all fantastic, the bar would be way up here and, you know, we'd have no concept of what is a good episode and what is a bad episode. So, okay, I treasure these lower moments because they make me appreciate the higher moments, and especially, and we'll get to this as well, but especially knowing where they're going next week and knowing what happened the last time they were there makes me really excited and hopeful. But this leg, it really, there was no compelling reason to be in Panama. For starters, there was no great cultural connection, there was no Canadian connection, and I also felt that it was not a very well-designed leg, and I think we got some feedback from our listeners that was kind of leaning in this direction as well. Like, these tasks were not the kinds of typically well-designed tasks that we have come to expect from Amazing Race Canada.
Yeah, and here's a comment as an example. Natalie Franklin from the Facebook group said, this leg was so poorly designed that having it be an elimination leg would have been a travesty, forcing a letter-writing campaign from me. Not me, Dan. This is me as Natalie.
You would have co-signed that, Dan.
So Yeah, and she said someone better have gotten fired for not knowing that other Panama sign existed. Now, I think they did know. That's the thing. She's kind of assuming there that they, you know, they didn't realize it or something. I think the show wanted them to go to the wrong sign. And I know I'm jumping ahead, but I feel like that's the thing we're getting questions about. It seemed pretty obvious the show wanted teams to go to the wrong side to enhance the drama, knowing it was a non-elimination leg. Am I crazy? It seemed that's the way I read it.
Well, Dan, let's go way far back into the annals of Amazing Race history. What's one of the very first things they are told to find?
It's in Paris, right?
Yes.
You're talking about where they had the pendulum, which was in, I did not try to butcher the pronunciation there, which, yeah, that's what killed one of the teams right off the bat. So it is a common thing on the show. You're right. I thought you were going to say Tacoga Gorge or, you know, in the first episode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no, that's a real place. He just said it wrong. But yeah, it is a common thing. And at least this time it didn't cause anyone to get eliminated. But I get the impression that the listeners of our show and the fans, people seem more upset even, like, I thought it was odd, but it seems like people are more upset than even I was about it. What did you think about the two signs gag here at the end?
I think the thing that really bothered me about it was that it did something that Amazing Race Canada very rarely does, and we've praised it for not doing this. It put the outcome of the race squarely in the hands of the taxi drivers. There is no way that any of these racers should even have suspected that there were two signs or that they needed to look carefully to discern where one sign was. It wasn't like there was a big Panamanian landmark behind John. Like, there were some different trees behind the one sign, and that's how you would know. There's no way you would have known. Nobody should have been expected to know that, except maybe the cab drivers. And again, one of the things that really sucks about this show sometimes is when they put the outcome of the race into the hands of someone who's not running it. That was the thing that really bothered me about it.
Yeah. And as far as we can tell, they gave them the picture. It's not like there was a clue that said, look at your picture carefully or something like that, which are some sort of hint. And that would have been more if they were self-driving. Because, yeah, you make up a good point, is that it, and if I was a cab driver, I'm obviously not, in Panama City, I would see that in your head. You just go to where the sign is. You know, maybe if you were the super expert, you would think, oh, there's two signs. But I think the people that got there earlier, it was just luck. It was, you know, luck, good or bad. And like we've talked about, we don't like luck being involved. Luck is a big part of the Amazing Race. There's no way around it. But you shouldn't design your legs in order to make it even totally based on that.
Yeah, you shouldn't make it. You shouldn't make it the final piece of a task. Like, you shouldn't make it the final piece of a leg, because you are then saying that everything you did up to that point doesn't matter if you go to the wrong place.
And you saw it, because Corey and Ivana, like, they fell way behind, and Adam and Andrea were last and jumped over them. And I don't get the impression they finished really close together on that task. So then everything up to that point, they still got third, even though they were the worst up to that point. Luckily, it was non-elimination, but it still has consequences, because Karen and Bird have to do a speed bump next week. And I've been calling them finishing fifth. I think we've been doing that since like leg three. So it doesn't mean Karen and Bird are doomed, but they could totally lose out next week based on what happened here.
My heart was breaking for Corey and Ivana this week, because it really felt like it should have been their leg. They were doing so well. They were acing the tasks. They made the right choice on the detour. And then it just sort of all fell apart in the end.
Yeah, it was another case where they've had this happen before, where they seem like they're in first or they're close, or there's been a few times and they never finish last. But again, they fell to second last, and they haven't had a lot of luck. And some of it's been their navigation, not this time on their end. But the way they blew through that boxing, there are certain things that they are just better than everyone else at, like by a lot. The question is that going to be enough? I hope so, because like I've talked about last week, I really like rooting for them, and they're just a fun team to root for. And I'm hoping they can make the finals, but they just have not had a lot of things go their way, even with the cab driver way back in one of the early episodes.
The interesting thing is, Dan, you just said something. I think you just described them the same way that we have been describing Karen and Bert for a while, because I think the same thing has happened to Karen and Bert, but I think we perceive it very differently. I think Karen and Bert have also had strong starts and then it's sort of fallen apart at the end. But with Corey and Ivana, it feels like they're at least being presented as far less culpable.
Right. And that's why I think that they have a much better chance to make the end than Karen and Bert. It's not that if you really look at it, their finishes haven't been that different. Karen and Bert have been more consistently middle of the pack. But they got to the roadblock first, Karen and Bert did. But you just kind of get a sense. And this is a lot of this is editing. I don't think that they're worse racers. They've been very good at certain things. But we are reacting to how they're presented. And they also keep showing them talking about, like, Corey and Ivana, they show them, you know, when they say they want to finish first, we're like, oh, yeah. And then they show Karen and Bert, and they show them saying, like, I think we're in first. And it's just the way they present it, almost saying the exact same thing. And I don't think it's all the teams. Part of it might be how they say it, but a lot of it's how they're presented, which makes me think, unfortunately, that Team Dan is not going to do well here. Because last week, I predicted the final three was going to be all your teams. Now, I think Team Giver is having a resurgence and will probably make it, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's none of mine, which that's good drafting. But a lot of it, I may be rooting for the final three to be those three teams that you picked. So that's okay.
Nobody would be more shocked than me if I ended up shutting you all out. I don't know how I did that. I'm probably never going to do it again. Like, I would imagine that in the spring when Amazing Race US comes back, Mike's probably going to go back to kicking our butts, but I'm just going to enjoy it for as long as it lasts.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the fact that at least I wasn't the worst this time. So there's always small victories in itself. But yeah, this episode, it's just one of those things. I have high hopes, like you said, for next week and where it's going. But I guess we could talk about the task. Are we ready to dive into each one of these things?
Yeah, I think so. I think we can start with the roadblock, which, as we mentioned, kind of a bog standard roadblock task. And it didn't seem like anybody struggled with the actual mechanics of the task. I mean, Karen obviously struggled with finding the task itself because she didn't RTFC. But, you know, the task itself, I thought it was going to be a lot more difficult than it ultimately ended up being.
Yeah, it was really all about going to the right place. It didn't seem like the matching, because you even had one where I think it was with Ryan, or I forget which one it was, one of the guys, who they basically were like, well, I guess that's the right thing. And they were right. It was like, I don't know. It could have just been the editing, because we didn't have a lot of time and we had to watch people drink beer for a while, which, you know, that's always fun. But it was one of those things where, like you said earlier, it does connect a little more to the culture. But most of it was about people, Karen getting lost. And while she didn't read the clue, I don't even know where she went. Like, it seemed like she just wandered the whole city for a while. And I guess she just went to the wrong street. But it wasn't even that clear to me what she was doing wrong. Though it would have been sad if that was where they took the penalty, given what was coming up.
Oh, yeah, for real. What I was expecting was something more along the lines of the clog task in Amsterdam during season 26 of Amazing Race US, where you have a shoe and you have to find another shoe that looks exactly like it, except the difference is, like, there's three red dots on your shoe and you have another shoe that looks exactly like it, except that one only has two red dots. And I thought it was going to be like, well, this is a blue butterfly over top, like, three horizontal stripes of red. And no, it turns out there's one thing with butterflies on it. And if you go find the thing with butterflies on it, then you've passed the task, which I thought was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, because we've also seen tasks like that where they have a mask and it's really intricate and they have to match another mask, sometimes while people are dancing around you or something crazy. This, you know, the way to make this really hard would have been, you should have had about five times more people wearing the patterns and had them all walking around really quickly or doing something. Here it just seemed like, again, could have been editing. Maybe this took a while, but the way that we saw it and it was presented, it just seemed like eventually you were going to find it. And I don't know, that's a little disappointing. It wasn't like I was throwing stuff at the TV. Not that that's a normal pursuit, but I was just kind of like, oh, okay, all right, let's get through. this is fine. I mean, they didn't spend that much time on it because we had, you know, we had to watch the detour and everything. But it was enough time where you feel like there could have been one more, just like one more layer to it. And I don't mean layer of color. I mean, layer like extra part of this might have made it a cool roadblock, though.
Yeah. And I think maybe it was more complicated than we saw just because we spent so much time of this on Karen not being able to find it and sobbing and should I take the penalty? And I thought we were going to get through the rest of the season without somebody sobbing that they need to take a penalty for no reason, but apparently not.
Yes. And I do want to mention the fun moment when Corey was so lost that he just stumbled upon like a baseball game or something, which I always like that when teams are like, I think I'm in the right place. Oh, I don't even know what's happening. He did not think that one of those were the actual people. You know, it wasn't on level of painting someone's house, but I did enjoy that one. So, but that's about all I have about it. Yeah, it was one of those where, speaking of penalties, I wondered later in the leg too, not with the detour, but further on, if teams were going to be interested in taking a penalty. Think about the penalty with the roadblock, though. That'd be 4 hours. So that's, I mean, she couldn't have been walking around for that long. I mean, it was probably a momentary thing, but a 4-hour penalty because you walk the wrong way, that's not a good sign.
Yeah. And I mean, props to Bert for saying it's going to be fine. We just need to sit back, take a breath and read the clue. And it turned out that was exactly what they needed to do.
Yeah. Bert knows the JL rules. So kudos to you, Bert, for listening to this podcast for the last few years and preparing well for the show.
Clearly, that's what he did. I mean, he doesn't box like me, but he approaches the race with the same philosophy.
Yes, he's a southpaw. Everything's weird. It's hard to figure it out. He's like Rocky Balboa. There's nothing he can do. He's got to switch.
Well, we'll get to this in a minute because I have a lot of feelings about this. But let's go to the detour and let's start with what everybody thought was going to be the fun part of the detour. And I mean, are we high-fiving each other or what right here? Because how many seasons in a row have you and I been sitting here saying, we need a beer task? When are we going to make people just sit back and drink a lot of beer? And the answer is now. We're going to take them to Panama. Can't think of anything else. Let's go back to the Rob Has a Podcast people who kept saying we needed a beer task. We'll drop the beer task in here. That ought to make the bastards happy.
I don't know. I mean, I know that some producers may listen to this show, and we were talking about this pretty early in season 3. Like, you know, when they had the face off and the disastrous face offs, that's when it originally came up, I think. So I think that's long enough where they could have put this into place. It was not like we were just talking about this at the end of last season or earlier this season while we were doing both of those things. But
we never stopped talking about this, basically.
The thing about it is, I think the listeners are probably mad because they're like, oh, you made us do that. But the thing, I like the idea of it. And I think me, like many people that have drank any craft beers, probably watch this task and go, well, I could do that. That's not hard. But it's not like they're saying, like the choices were IPA, pale ale, Hefeweizen. The choices were like peach or grapefruit or pear. I mean, I don't think there was pear, but, you know, there was all these different pineapple, I think. I don't know how well I do at that. Are you an expert, Jess? I have drank some grapefruit beer, but every one is very different. Are you the expert on the different fruits and how they relate to the beers?
Yeah, I got to be honest. Like all the fruity beer tastes the same to me. Unless you're talking like a lambic or something that is aggressively fruity, anything that's just got a citrus note in it. It's the same thing with like white wines. They all taste kind of citrusy to me. I don't know which specific citrus it is. And so I think in that regard, it would be, this was an almost impossible task. And I think the only reason this half of the detour was there was so that A, there could be a detour, and B, half the teams would be totally sloshed by the time they went and switched to the other half of the detour. Which, okay, that's entertaining and props for that. But I'm still waiting on that flip cup face off.
The face off basically still. And again, I kind of brought this up with Mike where I thought about it more. And you do have to give people an option not to drink, because you can't have people coming up and saying, well, I don't drink, I'm taking a penalty. That would be disastrous. So the detour is probably the right place. You have to give them some out, which I hate to admit this, but I still think the beer drinking face off is probably not going to happen. But really, beyond Sam and Paul, I mean, Giver was looking a little shaky because they were there a long time. But really, beyond Sam, I don't feel like anyone looked that drunk. And I mean, it probably depends how long they were there or how much drinking they do. It seemed like most people had not had a beer in a long time, but that just could be the length of the show. There was like, I haven't had a beer in a month. So you would think after this much, the people would be getting pretty drunk, but the show kind of underplayed it a little bit for the most part.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm trying to remember, there was a season where every team had to do a shot of vodka and it became kind of a thing for one of the more religious teams. But yeah, you're right. You have to give people the option not to do that. Although I think Team Giver in particular probably could have gone on all day, and I don't think it would have made a dent in their sobriety, because you know those guys can throw down.
Yeah, because really, and could you really tell? Like with, I mean, the way they act normally, especially with Ryan, I mean, could you really tell? Because he kind of looks like he's like a little bit out of it. Like Sam had that glazed over a little bit face by the end of the drinking when he was trying to box. So he was kind of on the same level, but they were there a long time. And I did enjoy also how everybody was really close and then they just kept doing worse and worse. And Giver even tried the let's just stick every single one in there, which only works if you have four of them, right? So there were, I don't know. I feel like this was a beatable task and it could technically have been faster. But once she started to fall apart, this task was impossible.
Well, I think one of the problems with the task design, and maybe this was happening and we just weren't shown it, but I was kind of surprised that they weren't telling anybody how many they were getting wrong and how many they were getting right. I was really prepared for that to say, you know, three wrong, two right. And then even knowing how many you had wrong would have been a leg up, and not even knowing like, okay, we got that one and that one right, and we need to get these other ones. It didn't seem like they were being told that information, which made it that much harder. And of course, as with any drinking task, the more you drink, the worse you get at it.
Yeah. So early on, they probably are thinking pretty clearly and you're almost have it. And as you go, it gets worse and worse. And then you start to think coffee tastes like grapefruit. And it's just bad. And this is not from personal experience, you know, anytime recently. But it was one of those tasks that I feel like was probably for me the most entertaining of the tasks this week, but still felt like it could have been a little better.
It did seem like this was a very lopsided detour, and that they were going to get everybody in the boxing gym one way or another, and just happened that some of them showed up drunk to the boxing gym, which is something that this podcaster may or may not have some experience with. But anyway, yeah, I think there's not much more to say about the beer. It was clever, but also like they have beer in Canada. Why are we doing this in Panama? I don't recall there being like a huge worldwide demand for Panamanian craft beer. That seemed weird too. Boxing, at least you had Roberto Duran. So yeah, let's go to this boxing challenge, which really did not seem all that difficult, and the only person that had trouble with it was Bert.
Yeah, poor Bert. You know, he's just, it's one of those tasks though, again, where it seemed like it looked hard, where you see all the different moves they have to make, and I'm like, oh, that looks really difficult. And I have no experience with sparring or boxing. I know you do. And the fact that Sam and Paul could do it drunk, and they both looked like they were struggling, and that almost everyone did it. And I don't get the impression this entire group is out boxing all the time. So it was almost deceptively the easier task. Because if you had said beer versus boxing, I would have thought boxing would have been more like almost like a dance. Like the rhythm had to be so hard. But no, they save that for the next task, I guess. But I will call out the fact that certain teams were really good. Ivana looked like she was so rare, like she wanted to punch something, and this task came at the right moment.
Well, I would say that Ivana looked like the only person that had maybe ever thrown a punch in her life. And as a fitness trainer, that's probably something she's done at some point. Like I know many personal trainers put that into their clients' routines because it's a very good cardio workout. So that made sense to me. And she looked like she had the mechanics of it down a lot better than a lot of these people, because that was another thing. They could have gotten way more strict with the technique, because nobody else was really throwing punches with any sort of technique whatsoever. And I would call out Corey in particular, because you're supposed to turn your whole body when you throw a punch. And he was basically just kind of flailing his arms in the right general direction, and they were calling that good. And I was, you know, that's my pet peeve on television, is like people boxing badly. I get very I get very head up about it.
Yeah, it almost seemed like the guy they sparred with was making it where he was like, you know, it's almost like he was guiding to make sure that no matter how they punch, they were going to hit his.
Well, that's things. Something you do when you hold pads for somebody. That's kind of part of your job, is like you hold them in such a way that you're not only suggesting what needs to be thrown, but knowing you're going to catch the punch. And it's something like when you're first starting out, you don't hold pads for other people most of the time. Like, you know, some fitness classes will have you do it, but really it's the trainer that holds the pads, because the trainer is going to like shape you in the direction that you're going to go. So in that regard, it was also very easy, because you didn't even necessarily have to have those combos totally memorized, because you could kind of tell where you needed to go based on where the pads were going if you knew what you were doing. So there's that. But I think we do need to talk about, I think Bert got hosed on this one. And I say this as a natural southpaw who boxes orthodox. They should have really let him throw all the combos left-handed. They shouldn't have made him do that orthodox. That was really not cool. It made the task much harder for him in particular.
Yeah, and I'm not a boxing expert, as you can see by me trying to say pads and struggling and being ready to say the things on the hands. You know, I mean, I've watched movies about boxing and stuff, but I would not say I'm an expert. But it did seem like in most cases, when you have something that's so tied into whether you're left or right handed or how you do it, it did seem odd that he had to basically do, he was the only one who had to shift what he was doing. And another good reason why it was nice, at least, that it was a non-elimination. I hate to say it was nice, because, you know, three non-eliminations in 5 weeks is a lot. But in this case, they would have gotten a pretty raw deal multiple times this episode if they had been eliminated. So that's a good point. I did not think of that as much when I was watching, but it's good that he got through it and at least they still had a shot. But that definitely did not help.
No, and he was the only person that it appeared had to do the task more than once. Everybody else seemed to kind of get it on the first try. I mean, I could be misremembering that, but it seemed to me like everybody else just breezed through that and then got to the really meaty, difficult part of the episode, which was this baton twirling band leading thing. And again, Panama, famous for marching bands. Who knew? I certainly did not.
This is why the Amazing Race Canada is so educational for us. Now, whenever we go to Panama, we'll just think of marching bands. That's what I will do when I visit Panama in my life, is seek out the marching bands. Who knew? But here, we buried. I cannot believe we've gone this far in the episode and not talked about the fact that Kenneth was in marching band in high school for most of the time and apparently got extra credit, meaning he didn't have to take as many classes, like he had spares. Do you understand what that means? So basically, he did it to help his other classes. What was the deal there?
Well, Dan, I'm not an expert in the Canadian school system, shockingly enough, but I think what he was saying there was that he was in the band because he got credits that he could then apply to his senior year. And I believe spares would be a term for study hall or free period. So he would basically not have to go to class for half the day because he had built up enough credits due in part to his involvement with the marching band. That was my read on what he was saying.
Wow, he's really playing the long game there. I mean, it's been bad for that long to get those free periods. That's impressive. I have called out Kenneth a few times as being kind of the quiet star, or not star like star on TV, but quiet, competent racer on that team. And that, hey, who knew that he had these skills? And they were pretty good at it. They were pretty good at the marching band task, more than most teams who, and also Sam and Paul were very good, of course, because that's the law. But, you know, those guys are just on fire. But it looked really hard. That is a task that I might just show up and say, how long's the penalty? And I thought someone was going to take a penalty the way we were going.
Yeah, it really did not look easy. I was impressed that anybody at all was able to master that, because it also looked like they were pretty exacting as far as not only what they were making you do, but that you had to get it in a particular rhythm. They were not being generous with their judging. If we were going to see a penalty from this bunch, I think we would have seen it here. So I guess I have to give props to this cast for not abusing the penalties, apart from Andrea and Ebony in that very first episode. We haven't seen penalties out of this bunch at all. So good on them.
And I don't think we will. I mean, if especially if you get down to four, I mean, the odds this week were low, but you get down to four and teams can't expect that there's going to be another non-elimination. You take a penalty at a super risk. It almost would have to be some case where basically like Dijon and Lalani, where they technically took a penalty, but then got eliminated. That almost seems to me the only way we're going to see a penalty, which is great. To go a whole season with one penalty is pretty insane.
Yeah, that's unheard of in Amazing Race Canada world. So this looked like this task probably took as much time as all of the other tasks combined. They seemed like they were there for literal hours.
And that makes me wonder if, especially for the teams that arrived early, like Corey Nivana, maybe it would have helped them. But still, you're knocking 2 hours on there. That's a lot to expect that everybody's going to be there that long.
Yeah, I don't even know if they, it didn't seem like they had planned for people to be there that long, especially given that the next thing they had to do was find that sign, which their clue was John posing for a selfie clearly 8 hours earlier in broad daylight. So there's that as well.
Yeah, it was something. There was, I think we've pretty much covered the sign, but it was a weird ending to the episode. I mean, you know, Sam and Paul call it the hardest leg yet as they won a trip to New Orleans. But in general, I feel like this was just kind of a running in place episode. Even I look at the placements and I think that could easily be how we finish, like how we go 1 through 5 at the end. Nothing really surprised me that much. And I don't know. It's one of those things where I think that was a really busy, hectic episode. Now let's go back to Canada and have something better.
Yeah, basically. This was really, you could lift this leg whole meal out of the entire race, and I don't think it affects anything.
Right.
So next week, it looks like we're going to Regina, which, as you'll recall, is the site of maybe the hardest actual leg in Amazing Race history. No disrespect to the Panama leg, but Regina was really a new level of Amazing Race difficulty. And I am really excited because it looks like we're in for another total bastard of a leg. What do you think, Dan?
This is going to be fun. And I'm excited, too, that they're going back to a place from, you know, their first season. We've got a double U-turn, which that's interesting. It's going to be interesting because it probably will be an elimination leg. So you've got a speed bump. You've got a double U-turn. Plus, you've got teams, which something excites me. We've talked in the past about the dorky Amazing Race Canada task, and I'm really excited to watch people try and be auctioneers. I like tasks like this, and I think, like the stand-up comedy last week, this is going to lead to some very fun moments. So, Jess, am I overselling it? Is this going to be fun?
Well, there's another element to the auctioneer task that I think they're definitely going to get into this, but I don't know if you are aware of this, Dan. This was something I was not aware of until I interviewed the man a while back, but John Montgomery's day job when he was but a lowly skeleton racer, he was an auctioneer. And he has those auctioneer skills. Those auctioneer skills are going to come out. And I am super excited to see it. Like, that is without a doubt the reason we are seeing an auctioneering task here, because we're going to see Monty geek out about auctioneering, and I'm here for it.
Wow, I forgot. I remember I listened to that interview, but I forgot that that is an important part of what we're seeing. And I wonder how much input he has on dorky tasks. I mean, this is not just dorky because he actually has a connection to it. But this is going to be fun. And there's so much on the line. There's who knows what's going to happen. The final five always seems like where the show really kicks it up a notch in terms of fun, but especially in terms of difficulty. So I think we're in store for a great hour next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a magical combination. It's auctioneering. It's a difficult task. It's Regina. You know, 5 years ago, before there was ever Amazing Race Canada, if you had told me that my favorite iteration of Amazing Race would be in Canada and the best legs would take place in Regina, Saskatchewan, that just sounds like a bunch of weirdness to me. And I'm happy that this is a show that can still surprise us.
Yeah, I think we're in store for a really good finish. Regardless of what we thought about this leg, this is a really good final five. And next week, I hope that our hopes are not too high, because I think the next week and possibly the week after, it's going to be a real nail biter and probably a lot of fun. The show really seems to take off. They've had some of their best legs, not even the one we mentioned, but at the final five, final four, those are some of the great legs of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody knows my opinion on when it's okay to have U-turns, and I do not actually think that the final five is the best time to have a U-turn. I think there are too few racers in it. I think, especially with a speed bump in there, somebody's going to U-turn Karen and Bert. Karen and Bert are probably going home next week as a result, but I think we could still be in for a really exciting leg, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, I almost think it'd be better at the final six to do it, or seven, but the show, at least it's not the final four, because I don't know if they rarely do that ever, but that's the worst. I think we'll see a face-off that week, but let's just hope for fun, and who knows, maybe we'll be surprised, because we've been calling Karen and Bert going out at the final five for a long time, so maybe something will change, but I have my doubts. I think you're right.
Yeah, I think let's hope to be surprised. And even if we're not, I think we're still in for an exciting leg.
So do we have more to discuss before questions?
I can't think of anything more. I mean, we did neglect to call out Ryan's inability to distinguish two butterflies from four butterflies, which brought to mind Monty Python and made me laugh a little bit. But I think for the most part, we've covered everything that we're going to need to cover before we dive into the many questions we got. And thanks again to our listeners who definitely brought it in the questions department this week.
Yeah. So the questions are so all over the map this time, because you have, you know, you have Derek Sue saying his question actually says, is the bear challenge the best detour ever? I'm assuming there was not a bear challenge that we did not get, but he says beer. My answer to this about the beer is no. While I'm very happy that they did the beer task, I would not say it was in the conversation. Is this the greatest moment in Amazing Race Canada history, Jess?
I don't think so. I think the best moment in Amazing Race Canada history is yet to come if beer is involved. I think we've got to have like some kind of Monty homage in Vancouver where they're walking a gauntlet of cheering people with a pitcher. Like, I want to see that happen. And I would immediately declare that the greatest moment in Amazing Race Canada history.
Yeah. And now, I mean, speaking of that, we mentioned this a bit earlier. Jessica Frey wants to know, was it a 5-hole that Kenneth and Ryan couldn't figure out the beer task? Would you label this a 5-hole?
It was 5-hole adjacent. I don't know if it was a pure 5-hole. I think these guys definitely know their beer better than most people. And Kenneth makes the point. He's a chef. He knows flavor. I was expecting them to do a lot better than they did. And if they were going to really rock a task, this was going to be it. So it was kind of ironic that the one person that should have had kind of a nose for these various different flavors, and he at least probably knew what cardamom was, unlike certain other people in the show. So, yeah, I don't know that I would call this a pure 5-hole, but it was kind of, they were kind of ironically terrible about it.
Yeah, and they were not that close, especially as we went along, like we mentioned. So what else do we need to answer here?
Well, Ray wants to know which was the correct fifth flavor that no one could guess. And she adds that everything about that challenge was pure gold.
I have no idea. And I know they were all close, but I'm not even sure that each of them had the same one that they were off on. My guess is it has to do with the beers that relating to fruit. And I'm guessing like grapefruit or the various ones. And also they were all the same color. My expectation is that is where teams seem to falter, because some of the other ones seemed more straightforward that were distinctive color or flavor.
Yeah. Oh, here's a really good point that I think we need to address. James Ong posts a picture. He has an illustration to accompany his tweet. And he says, is it odd that no one used the spit bucket and crackers? I.e., why not go for every advantage available? And I didn't even notice that there was a spit bucket and crackers. And yeah, clearly you should be using that if you're going to taste beer. The same thing, like if you go tasting wines, don't drink every single glass they give you, or you're not going to get to taste all the wines because you're going to pass out before you finish. And you need to like swish it around your mouth and spit it out, get the flavor, and then clear your palate with the crackers. And it's ridiculous. If people weren't using that, then they are dumb. And he is right.
Well, I think this question should go out to the racers who are obviously listening. So, Ryan, tell me, did you use the spit bucket? Please tell me right now. I need a tweet on this. Yeah, I didn't notice that. You know, I think we may have fallen into a situation where teams really wanted to drink some beer and they did not want to spit it out. and that may not have helped them on the show. So crackers probably got eaten, but how really good is it to show teams with food in their mouth, or even teams spitting for that matter? I don't know. I think that that might not be great TV. So it's possible there was a lot of spitting and the show decided, hey, that's kind of nasty, we're not going to do it. Am I crazy?
You're not crazy. I'm thinking specifically of there are many scenes in the movie Sideways that revolve around a spit bucket, particularly Paul Giamatti drinking the spit bucket, which was really horrifying. And, you know, showing the spit bucket like even kind of gives me flashbacks to that and kind of turns my stomach. So, yeah, actually, you know, Team Giver seems pretty responsive on Twitter. So I think right after we finish recording, I'm going to tweet at them and see what they say about this, because now I really want to know.
Yeah, I don't know if my call out on the podcast will be as successful. I'm sure they have good things to do, but I'm excited to find out what they say. I'll be keeping an eye out for that. So Alex Wilpon asked us a question on Facebook. Do you prefer non-eliminations to come at the end of difficult and exhausting legs like this one, or easier legs? What do you think?
I think the drama quotient is up significantly if you put people through the ringer and then tell them that it's a non-elimination leg. Like, if they're fighting really, really hard, I think that's much, much better television than if you just have kind of a blah leg where everybody's kind of finishing in a pack. And that you could argue that it feels a little bit less fair if everybody's at around the same difficulty level when it's kind of a crapshoot who gets there last and that person gets eliminated. I can see both sides of it, but yeah, I do think it's much, much, much better to have everybody really, really work for it. And then the person gets to the end and they're like, we fought so hard, it just wasn't going to happen for us today. And then to be given a reprieve, that feels so much more satisfying than if it's just kind of a boring leg.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that's another benefit when the show sends them overseas here, The Amazing Race Canada, and then they fly a long way, they do a long leg. Sometimes they even have it be a double leg, but that they make them go, they already are more tired than, let's say, they flew across Canada. So the fact that's going to wear them out too. And I especially notice this with the U.S. So I feel like you can almost telegraph, not even based on timing, but it does seem like whenever there's a leg that seems really hard, that isn't just, hey, let's go drive around for an hour and a half in a cab, they're often going to be non-eliminations. So I think Alex Wilpon is on to something here.
Yeah, absolutely. Gregory McBean wants to know what does cardamom mean?
I'm going to let you answer that one.
Cardamom is a spice. It's kind of a strong spice. It's kind of in the clove family. You use it when you mull wine. It comes in pods. I don't know. You'd know it if you tasted it, I guess. Like, I would taste it, I'd be like, damn, that's cardamom. I'm pretty sure none of those beers had cardamom in them, because gross. All right, what else we got? John wanted to know, is New Orleans one of the worst trips given out in Amazing Race Canada?
John, New Orleans is a cool place. I would not say it's one of the worst, especially, you know, I can drive there in about 10 hours. But if you live in British Columbia or something, that's a pretty good, it's a pretty good trek. It's not that easy to get to. And also, it's not a trip to Chicago.
That's true. I think Chicago still takes the cake on that one. Also, if you win this leg, it's probably, you know, it could be in part because you're good at drinking. And if you're good at drinking, New Orleans is a good place for you to visit.
Yes, it is. And of course, Sam and Paul were not that good at drinking, but they get to go and try some more.
They can hone their craft.
Ah, craft. I like what you did there, purposefully or not.
I'm not even sure anymore, Dan.
We've been tasting beers, trying to line up what those beers were for hours, and now we're going to go box.
Yep, and we clearly did not make use of the spit bucket. But seriously, I have gone to after work drinks and then gone to the boxing gym and was told that I was actually sparring much more fluidly than usual. So there's that. I don't recommend doing that every time, but it's a thing that happens, and maybe it arguably made some people better at boxing.
It could be. I once had where I had several beers at a happy hour and then went and played tennis for 2 hours and beat someone much better than me. And then I started to wonder if that was something I should do more often. But I have not tested that theory again. So maybe this is something to it. I think you are very loose and aren't worried about it when you've had a few beers, but I would not recommend it if you're going to do like somewhere like hot outside or to do anything crazy. We don't recommend any of this because We want our listeners to be responsible. So drunk box if you want, but not because we said so.
Yeah, I we do not condone anything that we ourselves have done. All right. So we want to give everybody extra special thanks for all of their great feedback and all of their wonderful, insightful questions. And we want to invite all of you to become part of that conversation as well. You can feel free to reach out to us regarding the content of our podcast to yell at us for encouraging drunk boxing. You can go to robhaswebsite.com, find the page for the episode, and leave us a comment there. We love hearing from you there. You can also tweet at us at any point during the week regarding past podcasts and upcoming podcasts. You can tweet at me at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton.
And we really don't care when you tweet at us. So we get people now that are basically live tweeting the episode as it's airing in Canada with the full knowledge that we're a couple of Southern Yankees that do not get to watch the show live. And that's okay. We know we're going to get spoiled. This is what we signed up for. So feel free to tweet at us whenever the fancy strikes you, whenever you've got a thought or two that you want to share with us about Amazing Grace Canada. We're always happy to hear from you. One of the more frequently asked questions that we get from our listeners is, I don't live in Canada. You don't live in Canada. How are you watching Amazing Race Canada? And the answer to that is we are getting tips from listeners who are patrons of Rob as a Podcast. And we have a special patron Facebook group wherein there is a thread where people post links and other tips for viewing the episodes. And so if you support Rob as a Podcast on Patreon, you can then gain access to that group and get all of our tips. And that's how we're getting them. We don't have any other special hookups. So that's the thing we recommend. It also gives you great perks like extra podcast content, which is very, very fun. The opportunity to connect with fans in the Facebook group, pre-sales for live events. There's so much going on that you really should be checking out in the patron department. So that's my plug. I guess that brings us to the end of our show. So I want to give extra special thanks to Dan again for bearing with me, for all the listeners for bearing with me last week while I was on vacation. And I want to thank you all for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.